All right, welcome back to another episode of We All Speak in Poems. In this one, I'm chatting with Six Missing and Anne Annie. We thought it'd be nice just to sit down and record a bit, so this one's pretty exciting for me. I hope you enjoy it.
I'm really just happy to get to meet you, well, in quotations, Eli, but like meet you.
Yeah, likewise. I'm stoked, actually. I feel like we've been chatting over Instagram for like a year now, maybe two.
Yeah, a while. I think I like came across your stuff by Instagram. I think I'd seen you had made like a handmade Euro rack case or something like that. Was it like in a suitcase? And that was kind of when I was getting into modular and Euro rack, and I was like, what is this? And then, I pretty much started at the beginning of your discography and have moved on like from there. And it's just been insane. And Brady and I talk about your stuff in our meetings all the time too, because I'm like, the progression is so crazy, man. I want to know about how you've gone from like Atmospheres volume one to The Wind.
Yeah, it's a good question. Also interesting that you discovered my stuff around the cases. I was actually trying to get back into, I hadn't done much music stuff around that time. I had taken like a year or two off actually during pandemic and was like playing piano and stuff for myself, but not Anne Annie style stuff. And I was like so nervous about trying to reintegrate into the music community, and like I felt so out of place. I was like, I feel like all I can do is like make something for the community and like build something. And I was like, this is the way. And then very quickly I was like, nope, I should be just making music. But yeah, I Wander Into was kind of the first time I'd ever mixed two instruments. I'd actually just seen, I watched that movie Arrival, and there's one track on there. I forget what it's called. I just added it to a playlist of mine. It's the track Disoriented. Mm. Oh wait, no. Yeah. Disoriented, actually from Annihilation. Oh. So it's from the movie Annihilation. Oh, okay. And there's a really cool like folk sounding, like country sounding guitar, kind of finger picking over this like super dissonant pad. And I was, I don't know, I heard that dissonant pad. I was like, man, this is really beautiful and like very much something that I can make. And the guitar part is super simple.
Yeah.
And so I just kind of, I think I made a pad through it on tape and then add a guitar and also put that on tape and just slow them down to the same amount, mm-hmm. which is the first track I ever made for Wander Into is Como No Rambi, the third track, I believe, with the super slow guitar. And that kind of opened up the door. I was like, whoa, this is sick. These two things actually sound great together.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, it's like, it's such a amazing journey to listen through what you've been doing. And it's so like, for me, I'm just so envious. I'm like, oh man, you've totally unlocked it. Like you've freed yourself. And I feel like for me, sometimes I get into like this box where I'm like, I am making this thing right now. And then it's actually because of that stuff that you had been doing. And like you had shared a video on your Instagram of you in like a church or a big empty building or something like that.
Oh yeah. Yeah.
And I was like, I should be putting more guitar into my stuff, 'cause I'm a guitarist first. Yeah. And I was like, I should definitely get that back in there. And it made it all over the thing that I just did now. But it's all like, honestly, due largely in part to your work. So it's awesome.
Oh, yeah. Thank you.
Yeah.
Yeah. I've seen a couple of your reels where you've been opening up some of the projects from the album and also some of the recording stuff of guitar. And it honestly brought me back to Wander Into stuff, and I was like, oh man, now my productions are like way too complex for my own head.
Yeah.
But I saw a couple of your videos and like sat down and like was like, all right, back to what Wander Into, which was still four tracks or three tracks and like or really just two tracks. It was like a stereo pad from the modular and then guitar at the same time, recording them live at the same time, and it was nice. I didn't save the project, but it was like a nice, I'm like trying to, the record I'm working on now is like, I want to move back and a little bit. And it was cool watching that stuff. I was like, ah, oh, man, this is the way. And it's so cool to hear any other artists I think that are doing the modular stuff and then, and the synth stuff and then adding in the other real elements and other genres. I think it's a very cool thing about our genre of music that is, it's super accessible in that, or it's super open to other instruments and other genres.
Yeah, cross genres.
Yeah.
TJ, I'm thinking even for your track on Here For Now, Fireside is very much like that, right? And like when we were working on that together and about to put it out, I was like, Fireside needs to be the focus track because it is that, you know, it's the cross genre, it's the cross instrumentation too, and it's taking the modular and normal ambient stuff, throwing acoustic guitar into it and vocal too. You know, the vocals on that track are beautiful.
Mm-hmm.
And it's funny because I feel like every composer, every artist seems to go in this wave of like, you start off really simple with just sounds that you like, and then you're putting that out. Like we all did that. And then you try to get too complex, you know?
Too clever.
Mm-hmm. Too clever.
Yeah.
And then you come back down and like, it's like a mesh of everything. And like, I feel like maybe that's where we all are right now. And it's actually kind of an interesting conversation being able to hear the new music from both of you guys, for myself, you know, and being able to recognize that, it's really cool. And like, it's like a, I don't know, I guess is the word maturity. I don't want to use that word because none of us are, but you know what I mean?
Yeah.
Thanks for aging us up.
But it's cool. Yeah. Like it seems like we're all doing it. And then it's like an infinite cycle of just trying to be too complex and bring yourself back down, and that's when you make the real gems of your discography, you know what I mean?
It's like I'm a sucker for a metaphor, but it's literally like catching butterflies, I feel like.
Yeah.
Where you're going through the journey and you're like taking all of these like Polaroids of where you are at that moment and like putting them in your photo album and bringing it back and like being like, this is the kind of like the in total, this was the vacation, kind of, this was the journey, this was the trip. And I totally agree with you. I wonder like too, if it has something to do with like, for me, I went through like a phase of hyper productivity in the pandemic. And then I think I totally like I just burned out with that, where I was like, okay, I gotta like slow it down a little bit. And as I started to slow it down, I started to do more of the stuff that I like started doing, which was like guitar loops and guitar ambient and pads and stuff. And it's funny, Eli, what you were saying is like with a lot of the earlier stuff that I've done, and somebody's like, oh, I want to remix that, send me the stem. I'm like, you're listening to the stem. Like it's all, it's a stereo print, like from the pedal board there. Everything was layered and live mixed. And that is it. I have nothing more to give you. Like,
this is, what do you mean?
Yeah.
I haven't had anybody try to remix any of my tracks yet, but actually I just sent my first stems over to people, and even then I was in my project and I was like, they don't need all this junk. I'm just going to make this a group and bounce this as Effect 1 and Drone 2 and call that good.
Was that a choice by you, Eli, like to not have other people remix your stuff? Cause I'm surprised that nobody's ever asked, if that's the case, that nobody's ever asked to remix your stuff.
Yeah. I don't know. I haven't gotten a lot of asks. Yeah, I feel like maybe I have one person, and I don't know. I don't think I've, I haven't honestly, I'm trying to think of like times people have asked me. I don't think I've had very many. It's actually weird to me. Sometimes I'm like, man, I feel like I could get a lot more collabs, but it's like people don't want to ask, which is funny.
You're like remixing yourself right now. Like, I feel like you're taking the earlier stuff that you've been doing and you're adding vocals to it and melody and strings and all of these things. And I'm just like, oh, you're just like totally, like upcycling is a horrible word for it, but you're just like transforming what you're doing already on your own. So I would imagine that's why people are like, oh, well, there's nothing to do there. He's already doing it. So
yeah, I'm just going for it. Yeah. The upcycle thing, I feel like, I'm not sure if you guys experience this, but oftentimes I release a track and then I'll be like, the initial like, oh, I'm done with it will happen. And then like a month later, sometimes I'll be like, oh man, here's a bunch of shit I want to add to it. And I feel like this year I've been kind of like, well, that doesn't mean I can't do anything with it. I can still, there can be infinite versions of this. And I don't know, that's been a fun feeling. I'm like, I don't have to be so attached to something being the final forever. And yeah, there can be reprises and different versions. And
yeah, that's kind of what I do. I mean, I automatically upcycle stuff because I always try to save money in sessions and stuff, right? So everything that I ever record another person, you know, with strings or horns or whatever, I always save them and chop them up into little samples so that I can use them later. Like even yesterday, I took the strings from my track, Real People in Real Places, which ends up going to this huge thing. But at the start, it's like these really subtle, crackly strings, you know, you get when you play it really softly. Mm-hmm. And it turned into a whole different track. How often do you do that, TJ, if at all?
That was my entire record that just came out.
Good point.
Like Here For Now was all sitting in a folder, like with multiple tracks in my mind done. And I just hadn't found like the space or the maybe like the courage to put it out like that. And it just sat there. And I'm really glad that it did, actually, because I feel like it kind of like fermented in a way that was really good, because I came back to it and I was like, oh yeah, like this is only halfway. This was only halfway done. Like I can totally fill this out with other stuff.
Yeah.
But I feel like with what you're both saying, it's like the new, I mean, I just saw a video of Joni Mitchell talking about Big Yellow Taxi, about how she just like constantly rewrites it and is constantly replaying it and playing it in a different way over and over. And like, I don't know, like maybe it's just with how we are now in the music industry and the cycle of just constant stuff, but like, why not keep experimenting with it? You already did the initial like hard work. It's your material. And now just like, for me, like if I find an artist that I really love, I want to watch what they do and I want to stick with them and see how they grow and all that. Like I remember when Fleet Foxes, which, oh man, I forget the name of the record, but the Wave or something like that. Like, and they had those like that 8 minute track and everybody was like, what the hell is this? And I was like, yeah, cool. I'm here for this.
I'm curious, TJ, do you, when you're coming back to your tracks, or like uncompleted ideas maybe, or tracks, I find when I've really recently realized that that's a really good way for me to work, is to like do the initial little bit of recording and then wait a really long time, because I actually really like mixing. I love mixing and I love being on the computer, but they're like kind of separate. I have to be in that mind space. And I've also noticed you've been doing a lot of like super interesting outboard analog stuff and processing. And I'm curious, do you feel like, for both of you guys, do you feel like there's like a separation in your mind between like tracking, recording, and mixing, I guess? Mixing, producing, or like, I don't know. I feel like it is like a stage, and like it used to not be, because modular, it's like you do all that and then you have your stereo track and that's it. And maybe you do EQ or reverb or something, but.
I think it changes all the time for me. I've been seeing, you know, what you've been doing too with all of the like reel-to-reel stuff and like straight to tape and just like heads down mixing in the like real dirt of it all. And I've definitely done stuff like that. I feel like for me, and maybe it's like where I'm at with just my like patience, or maybe just like my little bit of like attention deficitness happening, but I feel like I try to get as like close to the end as possible while I'm doing it. So that's why I'm liking doing the outboard stuff, because you kind of have to like commit to it in the moment. But
yeah, definitely.
There are definitely times like I feel like with exactly what you said is 100% how I do it too, is like I'll sit down and while I'm like in that moment and in the flow where like things are happening, I'll just record and not think at all. And then I'll come back to it. Like I just did it yesterday. I felt like it was last week, but it actually was back in like August. And I was like, oh, okay. And I guess those things kind of just like poke up and grab you when they're ready to be kind of like looked at again. I feel like that's a really easy way to just keep yourself from getting stale and bored, which I feel like neither of you seem to suffer from at all because of just how much you're constantly working.
Well, it's also a good way to just finish tracks, right? Like that's what I always say, like for anybody just starting to make music or just starting to produce or write music or whatever, like the most important thing is to finish a song and move on, right? And so like I got into the habit really early on just like mixing almost to the final mix as I go. Like by the end of the session, maybe I'll have to cut some frequencies at like 200 hertz by 6 dB just to make it like vinyl friendly or mastering mm-hmm. friendly, you know,
yeah.
cut some resonant frequencies and you're done. But like, it really is important to, in my opinion, as a composer, as a artist now, just like get the ideas and get the mixing as part of your workflow, you know, because I don't know about you guys, when I'm writing a song, unless I'm really, really into it, I do not want to come back to it the next day or the mm-hmm. next 2 days. Like,
yeah.
I want to be done it that day for the most part, or else it's just never going to get done, which is why I suck at collaborating, to be honest. But, like, I don't know if you guys are like that, too. But
yeah, definitely. We've definitely talked about that. I even though I'm like, it's been really nice to record a bunch of tracks and come back to it, sometimes I do the thing where I'm like, when I think what feels the best, what has felt like the most like exciting, is when it's like the track grabs me immediately and I'm like, all right, I'm gonna finish this in the entire day. And then yeah, I'll like sometimes leave it off in a place where I'm like, okay, I gotta do something else, and maybe I'll add some more parts later, and I'll keep opening it up and I'm like, that I don't wanna actually, only thing I have left for this is mastering and like mm-hmm. finishing it up. And it's been different, I've been having to slow down because of the like all these string parts are like making my projects over 100 tracks big, and I cannot mix as I go. It's got to be done later. But by morning was all like 10 tracks at the most, I think, per project. And so that was very much more like we'd like spend a bunch of days messing around and hate everything. And then there'd be one day where I'd come down and be like, that's just C. And it would be like immediately like, oh, this is the one. And then I'd finish the whole track and come back and master it a week later. And that was, that was the whole process of by morning, but it's very different. It's been very different this year.
I think like the skill that I'm starting to realize is the actual skill is knowing when to like push yourself and dig in a little bit more when you're like, oh, I'm not really feeling this, but maybe there's something there, versus this, just leave it alone, like move on, go to something new. And that's something that I'm trying to get better at these days, is like not trying to just brute force go through it for the sake of it. But then, like you said, there are other days where like I have so much anxiety that I'm not going to like finish this piece because I'm like, it's got to get done. I want this to be done. I'm so in the flow.
Yeah.
Like that, this upcoming record, which I got to send you, by the way, Eli, but upcoming one was with a clarinet player in Australia. And she had sent me just like 1 minute loops. And I was just like, this is going to be done in a week. And that was it. Like that was just had to get.
Yeah.
I don't know. It felt like it wanted to get done rather than me trying to make it get done.
Yeah. And that record's so good. Yeah. We definitely should send it over to Eli.
Yeah.
Do you guys, so for me, I definitely see a correlation between the amount of time that I work on a project and how much I actually like it. Do you guys find that too?
Yes.
Like if I'm working on a project for too long, I just have like the most sour taste in my mouth from it, even though I'll come back a few months later and be like, this was actually really great.
Yeah.
I should have finished it, but I don't want to, because it's like when I'm not around the music, I think this sucks, you know, even if it doesn't, you know. And it's actually the opposite for, I might think a track is great because maybe the idea is good, but the execution isn't so good. Do you guys get that too at all?
Definitely.
Yeah.
I've definitely gotten that, especially when working on mastering for other people. I'll just get oversaturated. I just like can't even hear the track anymore. And it, also, I think in like a lot of the mixing and mastering becomes super technical, and it's it's like splitting atoms. And it's at that point, I'm like, all right, I'm getting away from the creative side. And it's less, I've noticed that I think for me, the most satisfying and like productive, and also I think the best stuff has come out when it's like a balance between being really into it, but like also not thinking about every decision I'm making and just kind of like doing things like, okay, this is, I think it's relying on hear and feeling and not thinking about like, oh, well, this is, I don't know, is 30 dB too much or some, I don't know, technical stuff. It's like, I think I've had a better time when I'm just in the in-between of, somewhere in the middle.
Yeah. And that actually leads me to a question that I have for both of you, which we've been talking about a little bit, Brady, is like when you have an idea of what song is going to be the one that you think people are really going to like, and the thing that you like get most excited about, and the thing that maybe you spent the most time on because you did this interesting thing that you were proud of, versus the ones that actually do really well. And those are, yeah, in my experience, and at least in the past few years, they've been the like surprises to me, total surprises.
Yeah.
Do you both find that, or are you, do you have a pretty good handle on what you think is going to land?
Man, it's, so I got to the point where I've actually started doing the opposite thing, where if I think a song isn't going to do very well, that's my first single, because I know it'll do well, you know, like,
oh, it's one of these things. This is,
and I like that.
Eli, a perfect example actually for both of us. So like my track Notes is stupidly popular for no reason at all.
Mm-hmm. Because it's great.
You can argue that, but it was made in half an hour, like in 2017, because I was trying to bring something out for Piano Day, you know, mm-hmm. And it's just on MIDI. It's just a little sequence and that's all it is. And then 97 Dreamin' for you, Eli, like I'm sure you never imagined that to be your most popular song. It's on Atmospheres 2 and it's great. Mm-hmm. But even as a listener, I'm like, that's not your best song, you know?
Yeah,
you know
what I mean? It was a rogue. I will say, interestingly enough though, that song, I was like, the reason why that wound up in there at all is because I liked that song so much personally. Oh, okay. And I was like, damn it, I really like the song. Nobody else is gonna, it's a weird, like less than a minute song. And I didn't really, I feel like most of my songs that have gotten really popular have, the ones that are like my like most popular songs are, were at one point like my favorite songs, but there was a long time, like Wander Into when I first released it did not grab as much as I thought it would. And I was honestly really bummed. I was like, damn, I thought this was like my favorite work, and it's definitely different than my other stuff, but I was bummed. And then 3 years later, I was like, yeah, it's coming back now. But I also recorded that in like, I think I recorded that entire album in 2 days. And
that's amazing.
In like 16 hours.
It's the way like, it happens.
Pretty short, very, very short time. I had just come back from a European tour and was like actually feeling pretty. I was like, man, I felt very uncreative and very much like kind of burnt out. And like caught the bug, caught the like, excited about my work bug. And mm-hmm. I think I really don't push myself. Anytime I feel like not excited about something, I'll just stop doing it. And just I used to feel so much pressure and anxiety to like when I'd be like realizing that I can't focus on stuff. Mm-hmm. And I've honestly this year just been like, that's just my brain, that's just how it goes, and I don't want to keep putting myself in the position of being like, oh, I feel bad about that. And then it's just like a cycle in my head. So I've just been like very much like, oh, that's what's happening. So I'll just let my brain wander. And when the thing comes, that's when I'll like go full force and know that it's a good thing.
Oh, yeah. Well, I'm glad that you've recognized that, because like even in your output,
totally.
Even in your output from Wander Into 2 by Morning, of course you have that album with Amos Hart in between, but you can actually see like your input went straight into the ground, right? Or at least your output, not necessarily your input. And so I'm glad that you're sort of recognizing that the thing that's worked so far is just doing it when you feel like doing it, you know? And so just continue doing that, you know? TJ, I feel like that's the opposite for you.
God, yeah. But like, what an amazing thing for me to hear right now, I was going to say, because like, those are the moments that make me so, I get so uneasy with myself when it literally just happened over break, where it had been a really long year and I was like, okay, I'm going to take a break from like my day job. I've got 2 weeks off. I'm going to be in the studio every single day and I'm going to knock out like the next album and a half. And day two of break hit. And I just was like, there's no fucking way I'm walking into that room. I'm not doing it.
Yeah, totally.
I'm not doing it at all. And like, I took 2 weeks off and I survived and I'm still here. So like hearing that is a really good reminder to me is, yeah, just to like, even just listening to yourself, which is so funny. I mean, similarly, a track of mine that shot up was a last minute addition to the album, like the night before it went to the distribution. And I was just like, let's just see what happens with this. I just have it kind of laying here. But God, yeah, I feel like the tiny rabbit amongst giants here. You guys both have like huge pieces and just like you know,
Brady's got the rogue numbers out here.
Well, listen, guys, you know, I have all the access to the back end data, and TJ, I don't want to get into that here.
So you're saying it's math.
It is all math. That's all that matters in the end, really. Like, as much as I hate it, you know?
Yeah.
I'm glad that, so like, I don't want to get into it too much, but yeah, you guys are both signed to Network and you know, I'm on your guys' teams here at Network and stuff. When you guys signed, did it sort of take a weight off your shoulders to stop looking at the data or anything? Because I know that can be debilitating or encouraging, depending on how you look at it.
Mm-hmm.
Did it allow you guys to stop looking at it at all, or not really?
Let's go to the DMs, Brady. Let's see if that helped. Let's see if that helped me at all. No, it didn't.
I've gone through waves. There's a time when I was like extra. I felt like it went up. I was like, damn, I gotta be checking out my numbers. But recently, actually, since our last chat, Brady, when we were talking about all the singles I've been releasing and how my record is gonna be up, I was like, my record's at like 300,000 streams right now. But I remember that like I only look at Spotify numbers and Instagram basically. And I was like, right, I forget that I have a way bigger spread. And just in general, most artists have way bigger of a spread than those two platforms. And I don't know, it was kind of nice first. It's been nice being in that for the last week or so of like not looking. But I go through waves. I'll sometimes go through not really paying attention and being not thinking about it, and then suddenly being like, whoa, I'm hyper focused on this, checking every day and like every couple hours and seeing like what's going on and thinking about it way too much. So yeah.
In a selfish way, like before TJ, I'm sure you've got a lot to say on it, because you know me and you talk about it a lot, like expectations and stuff, I guess.
Mm-hmm.
But it's been an interesting flip that I didn't think would happen, but since I get to focus on the stats of the artists I work with, I don't worry so much about Alaskan Tapes anymore, which has been super freeing, because then the decisions I make aren't based off of, you know, these numbers. With that being said, I actually just stopped writing for Alaskan Tapes for the most part. Like, thankfully I had a couple albums in the tank, but I haven't written anything for that project in like 4 months now, probably.
Mm-hmm.
Except for like a Piano Day thing, but
I could see for sure where that flip has happened for you, Brady. And I think that that's probably really awesome. That's like such a great byproduct of having, like, because we talk a lot about, and I talk a lot about with other people who are artists as well, is like having a day job and your music job, or just having your music job, or just like having your day job. And I think that it's like, it's not one size fits all by any means.
Mm-hmm.
I think that the situation changes from person to person, but it sounds like that's been like a freeing thing for your artist, Alaskan Tapes. For me with the stats and stuff, I was joking, but I also do feel like I am, because it is the first kind of big thing we did together, I'm definitely more like hyper aware of it. But I think that the best benefit that I've gotten so far is like having other voices that aren't just me in my own head telling myself, this is good, this is bad, you should be doing more, you should be doing less, you should be like literally just having like a little bit of a like feedback, like sounding board support group almost has been like has made it so entirely worth it overall.
So now we've gotten to the real reason that I even wanted to do this, was just to confirm my belief that I actually am doing good work here.
Exactly.
But you know, it's definitely
giant fishing pole. That's the name of this episode. Brady has a fishing pole.
It is a definitely an interesting conversation to me, especially since stats and all this stuff are so public, especially on Spotify, on Instagram, all this stuff. Thankfully, Apple Music and Amazon and stuff, I like that they're not so stat forward, you know? It gamifies it less. But at the same time, I also, you know, I'm primarily a Spotify user, so I can't really speak that much. But yeah, it's definitely...
Yeah, it is a weird part of being an artist these days is the different levels of numbers and analytics, which is sometimes good, but also it definitely like creates a I think that plus social media has just has created a really interesting, I would say probably negative leaning like drive or like what's the word, but just like I don't know, putting the focus on something else, I guess, the, rather than just the music, it kind of like abstracts it from like the actual art. And
yeah,
it's just good sometimes.
Don't even get me started there. I could talk about this for so long, and I have to both of you for so long.
Yeah.
You know, there's an interesting thing where you're a musician that has to be more than a musician, you know, and I'm just, I'm dreaming of the day where social media that's focused on music like SoundCloud or like Bandcamp probably could be. I can't wait till something like that pops up again, because I miss the SoundCloud days so bad. I don't know how much you guys were like really in that, you know, scene very much. I guess YouTube is also like that, but it's a little bit more.
It was like the blog scene for me when I was coming up, like the God, I forget the name of that site that was just like, would do like kind of like mixes and all of that. And that was how I was definitely finding like a whole bunch of new artists and stuff. And like, oh, like Brooklyn Vegan and stuff, you know, like that's where I was learning about those things. And it felt like it was so much more about like just sharing good quality stuff. And like, it was just kind of like great that it became a popular thing. But now there's like this, I don't know if there's like this breath of desperation that feels like everybody's really clamoring to like survive on social media and to wade through kind of like the millions of dollars of ad spend that companies have to like break an artist and do all this stuff. And like to toot your horn, Brady, and Network's horn and stuff, it really does, like the conversations that we always had in the beginning were always just about the music. Like it was just about the music, and that's how I want it to be. And that's how I want to continue working. But yeah, I think like balance, like Eli, you were even saying they're distractions, but it's like we have to get, and I'm not good at it yet, but like it's figuring out how to exist with them, because it's never going to go away.
Finding the time and separating, I've been trying to find a way to separate. I think it's interesting. I feel like when I first started doing Annie stuff, I was like really, the social media stuff and YouTube felt much closer to like, I guess my personality or like my actual lived life. And now it's very far from that. I mean, not so much. It's more so just like, I feel more exhausted and like much more like, and not even really because of signing with Network. I was like starting to feel this long, like in 2019, I was like, oh man, I'm like, at first it was like the like routine of like how I post to social media is kind of nice. And I was like, oh, this is kind of fun. And then I was like, wait, as I'm like growing older, and I was like 19 or I was 17 when I started Ann Annie, I'm 24 now. And I'm like, I feel very differently. And it feels like I'm like, put it like I have to like change my like mindset a little bit when I like make Instagram posts or like do stuff like that. Cause I'm like, this isn't really how I think anymore. And just not really like, which is interesting. But yeah, like you're saying, like it does, there's like the survival aspect, which is like very much a real thing. And I'm very curious and envious of artists like Julie Byrne is so much not on social media and set like plays, does big tours, sells out festivals, and like has a ton of following and is never on social media, doesn't really like, it doesn't even have that much like that huge Spotify or streaming numbers, but it's just a very, one of those artists that just people know of, people that like, go to the live shows. And like, I think that's super cool. And I'm always curious about artists like that. I'm like, how did you do it? It seems so hard. I think also our music is like, it is not quite as, what's the word? Not accessible, but
personable.
Yeah, I think not having vocals and just the more experimental nature of it is starting to be more popular, but just, I think it's just kind of catching on these last couple of years.
Yeah, so another artist that I always think of when it comes to being able to get off the typical way of releasing music and all this stuff is Nils Fromm. He literally deleted everything. He was like, I don't give a fuck anymore. I'm starting a label and going on to do Piano Day, I guess. And
yeah.
You know, I spoke to his manager about it all and stuff, and it was, I don't know if he actually felt this way, but it seemed like it was just so nonchalant. He was like, he made a name for himself and he knew he was ready to not be in the spotlight anymore, other than like at his shows and stuff. And I was like, man, that must be so freeing, you know? Like, yeah. To just, you probably get to go into the studio and not be like, should I tell people that I'm recording new music right now?
You know? Yeah. Oh, dude, you are 100% touching upon something that, before we get too far away from it, I'm sorry to jump in on you. That is like, talk about something that has been happening more for me that I'm feeling a little gross about, is like when I'm starting something and something's happening in the studio, I'm like, oh, I should probably capture this. And then I'm like, oh God, why? Like, why is my brain even going there? Just like, just keep going. Like, who cares if someone sees it or not? Like, it's doesn't change the value of what you're doing at all.
It's definitely true.
I've had so many, because I started out just videoing everything I do, and I was like not even trying to make music, but I was much more like the video live performance aspect, and like, I don't know, at some point I was like, started to feel like a comfortable similar. I was like, I feel like a YouTuber, like I'm primarily a musician. I started to do this because I love playing music, and I like hearing beautiful sounds, and I love ambient music and like soundscapes, and like, I do love video stuff. I do love cinematography, but that's the secondary. I realized that I was like missing, like putting out, I think when I was putting out just albums that were like just the songs I'd already put on YouTube, I was like, this feels weird. This doesn't feel like it's like releasable tracks without the video. And I was thinking about that. I'm like, that's not me. Like, I've always been a musician, and like, I should get back to that. So I stopped doing the video stuff. And, but now it's nice to have that stuff, and like, people really like it, and it gets like the numbers higher. So I'm definitely like kind of have that same thing where I like, this is also why a lot of my tracks are 55 seconds long, is because I'll start it with the idea, or just be in the mindset of like, I'm making an Instagram reel, and then I'll just be like, well, no, I'm not. But now I have this really beautiful track that's less than a minute, and it just ends. So guess that's what it's going to be. But I definitely feel that it's definitely hard to not like, I don't know, it just sometimes that creeps in. I don't even notice it. I'm like, damn it.
I've always wanted to ask, like, the YouTubers who went full in on the YouTube side and not the music side, like, or at least from the outside it seems like that, like Heimbach, like Andrew Huang, like, why did they choose that side more? And because I think both sides are really cool. Like, I think generally speaking, I probably actually consume like Heimbach or Andrew Huang more than other artists, you know? And that's probably because it's more personable. It's they're trying to teach stuff as well. And especially in Heimbach's case, I can literally take the stuff he's doing and apply it to my own music. But I've always wondered, like, why go that route instead of going the artist route? Because in my opinion and in my experience, doing the YouTube thing is way harder. Way harder than actually just releasing music and hoping it gets on a playlist, you know?
I feel similarly to, like, the way that I became visible on Instagram, I guess you could say, is through like the guitar pedal community when I was like big into, you know, getting and filming and playing with stuff. And I had that moment that Eli, you were talking about, is I was like, I'm not a demo player. Like, I'm a musician. I don't want to get pigeonholed into this. But Brady, I've asked myself the same question about some of those people that do that, where it's like they don't have any music out, or they have hundreds of thousands of YouTube subscribers, in some cases tens of thousands of Instagram people, and then you go check out their streaming and it's like 15. Like 1-5, and I'm like, but you have all of the stuff recorded, like, just, and I know, you know, it's different for everybody, but just put it out, like, just release that stuff into the world.
I've been talking about a lot with my roommate kind of about just the differences, and I feel like when I made the, like, when I was like trying to bridge over, and there was like the barrier that I felt was really strong, was that a lot of those YouTube videos, it's like really cool to see all the gear and like not hear any production work in the background. And like, I think it's also really fun to like be like, okay, just hardware, no, like, not gonna use a computer, this is, you get the stereo track. And I started to realize that part of what made my tracks that I wanted to release as music different is that I would spend hours not doing hours doing things that I wasn't posting about publicly and not talking about, and like a lot of production stuff, a lot of behind the scenes. And because I got started as like a no computer, no DAW person, I was like, I can't really, like, this would be, I'm not gonna lie about this, and it wouldn't fit my persona to be like, here's a track that has so many sounds you can't hear or see or know what I did with. And I think like Andrew Huang and Heinbach are like, they're kind of like the tutorial mindset. And I wonder, and I'm curious if, because I've met both of them, and talking to them, I've tried to play shows with both of them, and they're both like, I don't know if I can, like, I don't know how to like set up a live show or live. So I wonder if they're just like being in the YouTube type of release and that, like, that type of platform just like takes away from, I don't know, it just makes it harder to, I at least I found it harder to like figure, like think about making a set and like making a, like a, even if I'm not going to play live, but just like a way to perform that's less, that's like more, I don't know, hard to describe.
Yeah.
It's interesting because I feel like YouTube is a place for a lot of industries where once you start posting there and start taking it seriously, you like alienate yourself. Mm-hmm. Like not only music, but in totally off topic, you know, industry is the skateboarding industry. Like skateboarding YouTubers are just like alienated.
Yeah.
Nobody wants anything to do with them at all. Thankfully, they can make money off YouTube and probably make more money than professional skateboarders. But it reminds me a lot of that, where it's like the minute you call yourself a YouTuber, you're not allowed to be anything else in people's minds a lot of the time. And Eli, you did a really interesting thing, and at the right time, I feel like at the perfect time, where you made your name as like the one of the modular guys or artists on YouTube, and then you were like, but I like releasing music properly, or properly in a different way. And then you went full force into that, and then it worked. Like, I don't know if a lot of other people could necessarily do that. And I think it probably has to do with like the quality of your music and stuff. But I think it's just an interesting story.
Yeah.
I think. And then even potentially going back into it or something, like, I don't know.
The going back in feels so hard. I mean, we've talked about it in our chats. We've talked a lot. I'm like, I'll do something. And I'm like, I don't know. I'm scared. This is, I don't know how to break into this again. And yeah, I think I'm also like, that like change kind of happened super accidentally. Like I didn't really think, I mean, I thought I had in my body, I was like, I don't feel good doing this and I don't know how to do it anymore. Like not even, I don't feel good, but I would like set stuff up and I'd be like, I don't know how, I feel like I've like lost this part of my knowledge. I just don't know how to do this in the way that like I was, it felt when I did it before. I mean, I do so many things based off feeling. There's no like reason for it. I'm just like, this feels different, so I'm not going to do it. And and that feeling, the like excitement, like, oh, I'm doing something that like is affecting people, that feeling was with my releasing music. So I just kind of like, also pandemic happened, I was feeling real self-conscious about releasing music in general, and spent just a lot of time like, I think a lot of what it was is I spent, there was a piano in the house I was living at the time, I spent a ton of time not recording. I didn't have a computer for 2 years in that time, so I couldn't record anything, and I just played music for myself again. And I was like, oh yeah, I love doing this. I love doing this because I love it and I don't need to share it with people. I still love doing music. And I think that's really what pulled me out of the YouTube, because I realized, I was like, I feel like I'm just like displaying myself instead of like sharing artistic creations. It just feels, which is personal. I think that, like, I don't think that everybody, if you're a YouTuber, that's like inevitably what's going to happen. For me, I was like, I gotta not do that for a while. But then I did. I got into it because I was like, Instagram Reels are the way. I can't make YouTube videos, but I'll do Instagram Reels for a little bit and then use those to build bigger songs. And like, yeah, so I guess I did. I was like still scared. I like didn't let go of the...
Yeah, you're like, you're leveraging all of like the available tools that are out there for artists in such a great way. I mean, you both are. And it's like, why not take advantage of this stuff that we have? I think... that's where I'm currently at, is trying to figure out like a healthier relationship with it, where I'll be in the studio doing something, feeling really great about it, walk out of the room, still feeling really good about it, come back into the room and open my phone to mindlessly scroll for a minute. And then I see somebody else do something and then I'm like, oh, well, this is shit now. And it does kind of like rob you of that. It can rob you of that joy. Mm-hmm. And I could see for folks that don't have the muscle to complete a track and to release a track, that could be a huge mountain to climb, to be like, well, why am I going to do it? Because this person does it. Yeah. And yeah, I don't know, kind of like looping back to the beginning of the conversation, just about like completing tracks, you know, that's like the, that's it for me. Like I keep to regular like hours, which is not always true, but I feel like that's helped me complete more stuff because I'm like, well, I've got until this set time to do it. And then whatever's not done, we're either coming back to it tomorrow or 3 months or it doesn't get done. So
I've also heard that's good for the brain to like,
yeah,
at the same time every day, just like your brain kind of automatically just habitually go into like the creative mode when you're like
habits,
doing the same thing at the same time.
Totally. Yeah. That's totally it. So I don't mean to left turn it here, but you both are pianists. Did you both like, is Eli, like, did you play piano before like just 2 years ago? I would have to assume so. Yeah. Okay. So was that both of your first instruments?
It was my first instrument for sure.
It was not mine. I very, very slowly learned piano through like sequencing MIDI.
Wow.
Interesting. Like in a piano roll, is that?
Yeah. Yeah. But like with a MIDI keyboard.
Yeah. Yeah. That's pretty cool.
Before I started making music, I had no other, like, so I started playing drums. That was my instrument for a long time. Mm-hmm. And because of that, I had no idea on like structure or mm-hmm. chords or keys. I still don't really. Mm. I just know what sounds good together and I've kind of memorized the hand motions. Mm-hmm. And I think it's really a really interesting thing, probably becoming more common now, right? Like Eli, did you actually properly do like the conservatory stuff as a kid or?
No, I took lessons for about 5 months when I was like 8 and then started to hate playing piano and didn't play piano for like 5 years after that. And then rediscovered that it's my favorite instrument and I really love it and was not taking any music lessons. And like similarly, I don't really know. I've just started learning music theory this year and like I knew a really basic amount, but nothing useful actually. Mm. And so this year I've been trying to get back to it, but it's all been like it's all just a feeling thing. And I like when I really start to think about it, I'm like, this is, I don't know what's happening in my brain. I just know that this area sounds good. And this, like you said, like this hand shape sounds really good with this hand shape followed. And it becomes just like, I'm here. So this part feels good. And this over here I know is a good area. Mm. And it's, which is honestly useless. Like I get really scared when somebody is like, "Damn, you're so good at piano. Will you play this track? It's in F sharp." I'm like, "Oh no, no, no." You see, that sounds bad. I don't know what that means. I can only play. I know my thing that sounds good. My keys, the Annie key, which is C.
I always get the DMs of people like, "How do you play this track? What key is it in?" And I'm like, "I'm so sorry. I don't know. Play these notes and in some sequence you'll find it. Like trust me, you'll find it, you know." Yeah. I really like the dissonance between F sharp and F. So just go around that, you'll probably find what I'm playing.
Yeah, you know? Exactly. That's what I tell when I've been playing with the string players for like live sets, I'll be like, "All right, so if you guys can play the pentatonic scale, any note out of that will work any time in my set. So if you get lost, back to the pentatonic scale, don't even worry. You can just rip that the whole time." And it's like ambient music. I'm like, whatever. If you play the wrong note, just find a good note and hold on that for like a minute. It's all good.
Lean into it.
Doesn't matter.
That's exactly it.
Yeah.
Honestly, like, and even, honestly, I've gotten to the point where, because for a long time I thought pretty negatively about the fact that I didn't really know music theory or have all this training and stuff. And I didn't even want to call myself a pianist. I didn't want to say I played piano. Mm-hmm. I just made music on with a piano, you know, but now I'm just like, technically I know what a C chord is, so I'm good enough. And like you're saying, Eli, play a pentatonic scale into a sampler and you know it'll make its own music, so you're good to go.
You know? Randomize the notes a little bit.
Exactly.
It's like the limitations really inform your artistic voice almost. And like that's so important to like not discount at all, like, because that is the thing that makes you, Annie, you, Alaskan Tapes, me, Six Missing, mm-hmm. like all of all of the things that we have in our brain that do work or don't work, like, are informing the language that we're all kind of like speaking in. Because for me, yeah, I don't play piano, but there's like a ton of piano on my records because I love the mm-hmm. sound of it and I know what I like. But if I were to sit down and try to like play you a piece or you put a piece of music in front of me, it's not going to happen. Like, it's just,
it's so hard.
Yeah, it just won't.
I feel like I'm learning piano again when I try to look at sheet music and do something. I'm like, this is, my brain hurts. What was your first instrument, TJ?
Well, I started on piano, but I was about probably the same age you were talking about, like maybe mm-hmm. 9 or 10. And, it was kind of like that or sports. And I had no interest in the sports. So my parents were like, well, you got to do music then. And I was like, great. But I got really bored and I don't think I had a really great teacher, which didn't help keep my interest there. So I would go home and I do a lot of stuff by ear, everything by ear. So I would just memorize the melody and the chords and the pattern in my head and then go. And she could have put any piece of sheet music in front of me and I would have been playing that thing, thinking that that's what I'm playing. So kind of lost interest in it, but I think that it came back around again. And also I think that it is the most beautiful instrument of all instruments because it's also like, it's an orchestra in one piece. Like you have your bass, your rhythm, your melody, your mm-hmm. mids, your top line, you have all of it just right there. It's a full body experience too. And it just like resonates in the room. And I think it's so gorgeous. And that's something that I would love to do more of. But guitar really was like my first, where I found my voice. That's like when I was like, oh, this is me. It was guitar and it was like classic rock. So it was because I'm a performer and I like to be performing. And the guitar brought me there super quick because I could do exactly like you said, like I learned my pentatonic scales. I learned them all up and down the neck in every key and great. Now we can go improvise. Let's go jam. And it just got me out there faster than sitting and, you know, beating myself up through piano lessons.
Somebody, when I was a child, actually said this to me, which is always, this sentence has always stuck with me, but they were like, I used to play piano, but I could never make the note sing as you do. And I've always thought about that. Cause I'm like, I'm not playing anything complex, but the feeling of playing piano is unlike any other instrument I play, which maybe is the same for guitar for you. Is like, it just hits a certain level that I'm like, just hitting the dynamics, I can like feel all of them. And it becomes way less about the actual notes and more so like the micro timing and like all these little things that is all feeling based. And I always hear that when I'm like, why do I like piano so much? And like, what's the difference between these and one of the other instruments I play? And just like, why is it stuck? And like, that's the feeling. It's just like, and also it's something I noticed with like listening to other musicians and like working with other musicians. It's like something I've been noticing is like, there's like people just have a way of like of hitting notes in a way that's just not, it's not the same. It's just a certain, there's something special about it that's like you hear it and you can immediately be like, oh, that is that, they are that instrument, like that is something one with them. And and also to go back to the like no music theory thing, I was just thinking this year I've been meeting a lot more people who are like, I think of as like, whoa, you guys are wild musicians. I can't even believe this. And like, who are also incredibly good and on tours and all these. And they're all like, it's actually surprising. The more people I'm meeting at higher music levels are like, I have zero idea about, they say the same thing. They're like, I don't know music theory. This sounds good over here. And like, I think this just feels right. And like, I haven't met anybody who's really like, I haven't met anybody yet, except in the classical world, that's like, I really love and know music theory and apply it all the time to my creation and art. Like, it's just not a, like kind of what you're saying about TJ, about like knowing what tools in your own brain to like pull from, and like it like makes our voices and it makes us individual artists and like unique artists and not just like studio musicians and so session musicians.
I've also noticed this thing of like, a lot of especially my favorite musicians and stuff, they just don't have the theoretical knowledge that maybe these geniuses that I hold highly over here, like there's two columns almost, right? And typically speaking, I gravitate towards the people with very little theoretical knowledge and stuff like this. They obviously know what they're doing, but like the ones that didn't grow up like playing violin for 6 hours a day when they were 7 years old, you know what I mean? And then I've always wondered why, like, at least from the outside, they seem so much more successful. It's probably the wrong word, but like at least in terms of streams and all this stuff. And I think it really has to do with not focusing so much on the, like, the notes being played, but in the, oh, there's some words that I'm thinking of, and they're like the smartest words I've ever thought of, but in the context. So
we'll
like,
hold for Brady's genius.
So when you don't really know what's going on, you're like always considering the context around the notes, right? And not thinking about it too hard. Whereas if you know all this theoretical knowledge, you're thinking too hard, this chord has to come next.
Right.
And then it probably has to do with accessibility too. When you're playing complex theoretical stuff, it's just less listenable than a nice four chord, slow paced thing, you know, at least in my opinion. Also depends on the type of music. I don't know where I'm going here, but I think about it a lot.
It's all about the emotion. It's all about the feel. I feel like that's why three of us here could play the same thing in three different ways and it would sound differently. But like to us, that's the emotion that we're bringing to it. And I think that that's also like the difference between people that are, I don't know, more like maybe more classically trained. That's a little bit more mechanical because it's more of like an Olympic feat to be able to accomplish the piece, which in and of itself is magic to me. But I think that there are then those players that are those hybrid, like classical experimental players that can bend those rules in a way that when you hear it that way, you're like, oh, okay. I mean, like, you know, there are certain guitarists that when they hit a note, their entire body is playing that note. And even with like that, you know, the, what's that Maestro movie? Like watching those two clips back to back of like the movie versus the actual archival footage, you're like, well, one of these is an actor and one of these is purely feeling the magic through his entire being. So I think it's just all about feel and emotion. That's literally all there is to it.
That's why I think C-Rose is so big, is because he's doing all really simple stuff, but when he sings it's like so from such a deep place, and you can tell he's singing some from like such a raw place himself. I think that that it feels very genuine and very connecting immediately, because you're like, whoa, this is not, I do not connect with people like this. Especially people I don't know. Like, it's cool to like be in that setting and like definitely all about feeling.
Through this whole conversation, I've just been thinking about that movie Soul. Have you guys seen this by Pixar?
Which one?
I had to stop. I didn't like it. I started watching. I was like, I can't finish this.
Really?
This is hard.
Soul?
For me.
Yeah.
Like, I need to try again. But
I mean, it's obviously not the best movie. It's a kid's movie, but it's about a jazz pianist who dies and then then has to go back into the afterlife through his flow state of playing the piano.
Wow.
A very general thing, but I don't know why, like in this whole conversation I've just been like imagining that movie, like this is interesting. There's probably something here, but I don't know what it is.
Well, I think that when Eli, you're talking about just that instrument and that place that you get to, and how it just, you just almost transcend, I think that that's when you're talking about like talking to other musicians that are in quote, like successful places that are like, I don't know anything about music theory. It's like all these people are just tuned in, and both of you included, like you're attuned to your gift. Like you have a gift that is, that not everybody else has. There are other people that can cook. There are other people that can speak languages. But there are some people that can like take all that stuff that's out in the ether and like put it into kind of like consumable sonic experience. And I think like there's a responsibility, I think, that comes along with being able to do such a thing. And I'm so happy that both of you are doing that, and that you know, you're giving me the opportunity to do that more, Brady, with this too. Not to get all heavy on you. I said I was fighting off a bit of a cold and I'm getting like a little spinny, so, you know.
Yeah, that's okay. I'm too. I've been in cold world the whole whole week.
I think it brings up an interesting conversation that I don't think I, outside of a podcast format, it's not really necessarily the most interesting conversation to have unless you're like with the person and like really connecting. But like the conversation on like having a gift or like natural born talent. Do you guys believe in this? I don't think I do, but I would like to know your opinions on it.
I feel like maybe not. I feel like I've noticed, well, I don't know. I feel two ways. Is one, I feel like maybe not. I realize that if you have the ability and environment and like accessibility to put your mind in and energy into something full forced as you want to, then you can pretty much do anything.
Yeah.
But there's so many barriers to entry for that are just out of your control that like, I feel like the gift part is that like sometimes those barriers line up into be that like randomly that like you can do the thing and like, that I think is a gift in itself is like maybe the, as a human being, we all share the same potential to be able to do stuff. But then like just the things in life that change how we are able to like go about our lives, I think is a gift. And then also, I don't know, sometimes I have ADHD and sometimes I'm like, this is actually a gift because I can, part of like when I realize that I'm getting hyper-focused, I'm like, this is not something I feel like people without ADHD or like, I don't know. I just, that sometimes feels like a superpower. I can feel it being like extra, just like, oh, I'm like, this is, now I can just rip through a bunch of stuff and be incredibly focused. But then, yeah.
I wonder if you're open to talking about that a little bit more, Eli, because I struggle with like depression and there's always this topic of like, that comes up where it's like, well, there are like things that you can do these days that would help you like medication wise. And I feel really of two minds on that. And the mind of me that keeps me from doing it is honestly like, I think that that's partly like the reason why I'm able to do the things that I do. And I don't know that I want to turn it off. I don't know if you're open to talking about that at all, but if not, that's all good.
Yeah, very much so. I actually really appreciate talking about this kind of stuff, especially with in the music world and with other artists too, just because I think it's really prevalent in, especially today. But yeah, I definitely felt that too. I was diagnosed a couple years, 3 years ago, and I had like always known that I had ADHD, but I'd never like got an official diagnosis. And then I did, and I was like, let's go get medicated. And it was great for, I was working in a kitchen and it was good for some things, but I noticed that, the first thing I noticed, I was like, man, I actually have done a really good job of like figuring out how to like carry myself through the world with this thing that's different from a lot of people, that is sometimes really negative and sometimes can be very harmful and like sad and hurtful to deal with. And like, I've also struggled with depression a lot. And I think partly like what I was talking about, like not putting pressure on myself, like as like a mental health thing, like if just in general, if I like start, if like something doesn't make sense and I like get into like kind of ADHD frustration or just like like certain moods that I like can't understand, I like very much now I take the pressure off and just be like, that's okay, like this is just how my brain works. And then also like trying to see it as like there's really good things about it, and because of those things, and like I've been able to do some really cool stuff that makes me really happy and it's really cool and like I enjoy. And I did feel the dampening of that, and I was like, I don't know, this doesn't, I think it really works for some people. I think I just noticed for me, I was like, I can come from a new perspective against my own mental health and be like, this is actually, and like be much more loving in it and be like, this is a good thing. And like, there's very good things about even the negative things I feel. Like there's always there may be another side to it. And trying to stay in that and see the positives on things always. And yeah, not putting pressure on myself. Like, it's hard. The world is hard. It's hard to function. Especially as artists, it's hard to not fall into that really quickly. And like, there's so many things that are stressful just outside of artists and being just a person in the world that I'm like, yeah, it's no joke. it's fucking rough out there.
Yeah.
So
yeah, just yeah. purely being a human being like is a lot. That's, man, I mean, doesn't matter how old we are, but I know that when I was 24, I didn't feel like I had that understanding about myself, like, at all. So that's just amazing. And why, like, I feel like when I listen to your music, and Brady and I even talk about it in meetings, and when we talk about you as an artist, where it's like you're, there's like this wisdom that permeates it. And I mean, even just talking to you now, like, I'm like, oh yeah, well, I get it now. Now it's like, I feel like I already knew you before I started talking to you, because it's like your music was so open in that way. So yeah, I was a dumb 24-year-old.
I mean, I will say I'm a dumb 24-year-old too. I make some pretty rogue decisions that are just not good, but yeah, thanks for saying that. That means a lot. I think I subconsciously feel that I do that, but it's really, it means a lot to hear that, just because I feel sometimes like an exposed nerve with some of the stuff I share. I'm like, and like, that's part of like waiting. I like wait until I'm like in a very vulnerable state, honestly. And like some of my best music, and partly why, maybe from like, I don't know, kind of like a funny thing. I'm like, I gotta be able to feel the really hard things, and like, putting, and like I've noticed that like one of the things that is like a safe place for me is making music. And so I'm like, all right, like that is how I'm able to turn a lot of heavy things into this other beautiful thing. And like, that is like how I'm able to, yeah, I don't know. I'm like, I don't want to take that away, even though it's like, I don't like feeling it bad and heavy. I'm like, this is also, there's a lot of good output from it. And maybe somewhat unhealthily, I'm like, I'm worried about, you know, messing with that, but also it's good to be healthy too. So.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah. TJ, do you feel like you feel that sentiment of like, because so back in the day, of course, like I was making a lot darker music. I was really into like IDM and dark ambient, I guess. And so like, I would be like, I need to sort of be in the dumps to make the music. Of course, we all know that's unhealthy. But it's some part of your mind still tries to justify it, right? Because I think in all of our lives, probably the art and the music takes up, takes a higher ranking than a lot of other things, you know? It's like the most important thing to us in a lot of cases. Do you feel that sentiment too, TJ, of like?
Well, I mean, I don't know. I feel like sometimes the honesty is in that I'm creating and not necessarily what I'm creating, because I know that sounds confusing, but like oftentimes the inner world is not matching it's the opposite of what I'm doing. So it's almost like I'm trying to like calm the waves with the art, as opposed to I'm creating from this very peaceful, very blissed out like state. Like it's not, it's usually not that at all. Like it's usually me in a, you know, the throes of high anxiety or depression and sitting down and being really just exhausted or frustrated or just not in a good place. And using, I mean, it's what I feel like I'm hearing Eli say, Brady, what I feel like you do is like you transmute these negative things, or, you know, one could be perceived as negative things or challenging things, into positive, really beautiful stuff. And so I feel like I don't intentionally mean to be in those places, but I guess that's where I feel the most like ego destroyed, where like my brain, my sense of self is not getting in the way, being like, let's make something cool. I bet someone would want to hear this. And more like, I wonder what would happen if I like fed this into four different versions of a tape loop and slow it down every time, and then put that through this reverb, because I'm not feeling very creative right now. And then that leads towards something that I had no idea that then inspires the thing that's like, oh, cool, now I'm feeling better. Like it's almost a self-medicating, self-healing thing. And at least for like the project of Six Missing, I feel like that's why I had like a mission to put this music out, because I was like, if it helps me to make it, maybe someone will feel a little bit better, even just marginally, like listening to it.
Yeah. Yeah. That's how, I mean, I started making ambient modular stuff because I was like, this helps me sleep, and
yeah,
it's relaxing in a certain way that maybe is helpful too. But yeah, I definitely feel the processing heavy and emotional things into positive things is definitely part of my heavy stick for sure.
Yeah.
Very strongly.
I think it's probably like, you know, ambient artists in general don't have much opportunity to speak like this in general, right? Like, how many podcasts have we all been on, right? Probably not all that many. But I think it'd be surprising for a lot of listeners to sort of hear this because of the output that we make, and it is sort of blissful and ethereal and stuff like this. And so I like this conversation. I think it's really important for people to know where the music comes from, in what context it was made in. You know, obviously not every song is made, you know, totally depressed or in going through an episode, but
yeah,
right. You know, in the context of the life and what the artist is going through on a day-to-day basis, like, I think it's really important and gives a lot more meaningful context behind the music.
Yeah, which is why I think what you're doing with this, and why, like, when you set this up, I was so excited, because like, I just want to talk to more people that whose like music I really love and love listening to, like both of yours is in heavy rotation for me. And so to hear, even just in a little way, that we're all like, we all share, have a shared experience in that way, it feels a lot like better, you know, that we're all kind of doing that. And Eli said at the beginning, you said about how it feels like sometimes ambient music can't be like as personable, or maybe Brady, you said it, but yeah, that's totally it. It's like, there's a story behind it, not for every piece of ambient music, but there are stories for sure behind it all.
Yeah, I think maybe that's probably what makes it less personal, or more personal maybe, but also like, because oftentimes I think popular music is always the like pretty happy, like oftentimes the more upbeat, like happy stuff, because people don't really like to feel really sad. And then the other stuff I think that's popular is like folk stuff, that's pretty straight, this is how you feel. Mm-hmm. I think ambient stuff in terms of emotions and like listening leaves space for like a lot more thought and sometimes anxiety and sometimes peace and bliss, but there's just, it's just much more of an open canvas to like how the listener interacts with it. And I think that makes it sometimes overwhelming. You don't know how to approach it. And
yeah, that's, I don't know, so perfectly put, and something that I never realized, because I, as someone who is like technical music person, I always got into music like this because I was like, oh wow, how did they make that sound? But for people that don't, and they want to just consume a song, it's harder. Mm-hmm. It is a little bit more of a challenge, I think. And that they do have to sit with themselves, which people don't like to do all of that much, and can bring up a lot, whether you realize it or not. But I don't know. I think that that's like where I think the positive healing side of it all comes into play.
Yeah.
100%.
Yeah.
Yeah. It was great to actually get to chat with you, Eli. Thanks.
Yeah, likewise.
For sharing all that stuff.
Yeah, let's definitely do it again soon. I'm sorry to cut it short, too.
No, it's all good. This works for me.
And yeah, I really appreciate you two being open to this, too. It was fun. I don't know.
Yeah.
Always.
Yeah, man. I would love to do it again.
Thanks for listening to another episode of We All Speak in Poems. I hope you enjoyed this one. Please make sure to go follow Ann Annie and Six Missing on all their socials, and I'll catch you on the next one.